Welcome to Unfinished.
On today's episode, we are going to be talking about a very sensitive subject. Please forgive us if we have said anything wrong or offensive. Our prayers and thoughts go out to anyone who has lost a loved one due to gun violence or any other types of violence. We are just trying to learn and grow on this unfinished journey called life. We are going to unbox a question: are Somalis violent? Stay tuned and find out.
Our topic today that we're going to get into, which is violence in Toronto. I think that the city is not doing enough of a good job and giving resources to kids in underprivileged communities to keep them busy. The community centers are not as effective anymore. I just feel like there could be a lot of things done to make the kids of today a little bit more busier. That's why they're picking up guns. I don't know. We could speak about this, but I feel like, what do you guys think? A lot of these new kids are bored?
It's a very touchy and scary subject. So I brought my girlfriend to protect me today, because in 2021, women protect men.
We provide and we protect.
Yep.
What's better than that?
And right now, Bello with two L's and Nomad are standing up for an inanimate object, but we're not going to speak on it. We're just going to call it.
He brought a stuffed animal, y'all. He brought a stuffed animal.
Don't talk about my girlfriend like that.
And I don't know what she's going to do for us, but okay. It's his good luck charm, so.
I think she's a little bit jealous.
She hated it. Oh, no.
All right, back to being serious, guys. We have a very, very big prevalent issue. And we obviously are not going to come up with all the answers today, but maybe we could speak about our own experience, what's going on, what we think we could do, how we could come as a community together to try to tackle this problem, man.
Yeah.
It's a very, very tough issue, because it doesn't only affect the Somali community. This is a problem within Black communities and other minorities. We've lost young Somali brothers to the streets, and I wanted to ask you guys, why is gun violence a problem in Toronto?
I feel like gun violence became a bigger problem. It's not a new problem, but it became a bigger problem now in the later 2000s. I feel like growing up, I used to hear about people getting like shot and killed in my neighborhood, but it was like two every like 3 years, as opposed to now where it's like seven in 1 year, you know? I think guns are more accessible now. There's little to no penalization for anybody. I've never seen most of my friends that were murdered. No one like was trialed for their murder.
Unsolved.
All of them go unsolved. And I think even when I have when parents and like people from the public and from our communities try to communicate with law officials about what's going on in our communities, they kind of point the finger back at us. And say like it's a you problem, it's not a us problem. And for a long time I didn't understand that, and now I'm thinking it is a problem that starts at home and a problem that starts within our community, only because I'm not saying that law officials are, no matter if we tell them in advance what's going on and try to make them understand the narrative of both sides, people are going to be put to like be punished for what they're doing. But at least if we are able to make our neighborhood safer, you know, have cameras at work, have places like resources where kids could go into the community centers and play. I feel like a lot of the times these kids are bored, and we need to kind of, I don't know, I think they're bored. We need to,
you know,
give them like
something to do.
Mm-hmm.
Idle hands is a devil's playground. Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
So I lost my brother due to gun violence on Hista, and we grew up in a household where we had a very strong connection with my father. My father was very hands-on his whole entire life, right? And my father wasn't oblivious. My father was actually like overly like in my brother's face, like, what are you doing? He showed up to every court case, like everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And he the people around him, like my aunt and my mom, my mother's sisters that also played a role in raising us, they thought it just stopped at like, oh, just like Baluwa, these kids are doing these things and they're using these drugs or whatever. And my father was more like, no, they have like, he knew the play of like brotherhood and the fact that these kids are not in gangs, but they're like, they represent each other and they're going against this. Like my father, like, I feel like a lot of parents are oblivious to the dangers in hand. Like they think it's more about using Baluwa than people just fighting at parties. They don't know this is a generational beef.
They put their trust in Allah, because at the end of the day, everything is written.
Absolutely.
That's right.
No, so what they don't know is that now innocent kids are being targeted. So right now there's no honorable in how things are working.
Yeah.
When I was younger, it used to be more like, he did this, it's like tit for tat, right?
If I have now, a problem with you,
yes.
It's a problem with you, not with whoever you're with. It's me and you have an issue, that's what we're going to end
it. Now it's just anybody can get it. So the game has completely changed.
I wouldn't say that game has changed. I just feel like it's bigger than the violence itself. Like, everything is written for you. That at any given moment, people could die. So when a sign of Islam, is a lot of death and a lot of births.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at Muslim countries, they have a lot of deaths and they have a lot of births.
Mm-hmm.
I personally believe Somalis are the most righteous of mankind. That's me speaking from a biased place. But when I look at the hardships that Somali families go through, I see a lot of righteousness. There's every family has a lot of problems that they go through.
Of course,
that
Allah's always going to give us calamities.
Exactly.
But what's the difference between me growing up in the neighborhood I grew up in for 25 years plus, and then my neighbors that are Bangladesh, I grew up in the same neighborhood, and all my siblings turned one way, and all their children turned the other way. Like, what's causing Somali families or Somali brothers to join a lifestyle that's foreign to us, but it doesn't have the same... It's not the same narrative for other Muslim minorities in the same neighborhood as us.
What do you think it is, Smooth?
For me, growing up in a neighborhood where gang violence and things like that were always prevalent,
mm-hmm.
I feel like from then and now, Allah has changed, because back then it used to be one or maybe two guys have a gun, and that guy is scary, and everybody stays away from said person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how life was. But now we're at a time where guns and everything else are so accessible. So now it's not like who has a gun, it's what you do with your gun.
Mm-hmm.
So now, and you asking me, like, what do you think it is that separates the Somalis from the other Muslim minority communities? Somalis, we are a culture where we like to do things together. We are so united in what we do, whether it be good,
mm-hmm.
whether it be bad. So as much as we'd like to do good, if there's a group of bad children,
mm-hmm.
and they outweigh the group of good children, they are always going to have power over that place. So let's say, for example, you have a bunch of kids that go to college, go to university, and they all live in one neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of kids that are in the street lifestyle, the gang lifestyle, and these kids, now you have to remember, all these kids grew up together,
mm-hmm.
right? So now they have connections, regardless. The good kid, the bad kid, all of them have a connection that's beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a brotherhood, regardless. So now, you live in this neighborhood, now these guys are causing trouble, the bad guys, the guys that are considered bad guys, mm-hmm. are causing problems, going on, having beef, doing what they do. That's always going to have a ripple effect.
Of course.
It's always going to have a ripple effect to the good guys, the people that go to school, that are considered
Absolutely.
Good people, that do good things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, how do we stop the majority of children being bad, as we say?
I think that's
the main issue.
I could definitely agree with that.
It poisons the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
If there's more bad than good, there will always be problems in your neighborhood. So if we're not promoting good things and good lifestyles for these kids,
mm-hmm.
it's like the bad's always going to prevail.
True.
And we're always going to look at it like, oh my God, look at these kids, they're so bad. But we never focus on the good kids because there's not a lot of them. right? They don't have the power. Mm. So we got to make sure that we give power to the ones that are powerless.
So when you define good and bad, the kids that are more focused on their future, are they perceived as different?
No, I feel like they're perceived, like, this is the thing, this is the misconception that people...
Everybody wants to be that guy.
Yeah, everybody wants to be the hood dude and be that. But what you don't, yeah, but you what you don't understand is that same hood kid that's so glorified, mean and yeah. so glorified, in that neighborhood, he might be the nicest kid. Mm. Every aunt and mm-hmm. every uncle mm-hmm. and every person in that neighborhood might love that kid, and he might be a beaming light of happiness. Mm. He might be the guy that is... helping your mom carry the groceries. He's in the summer buying out an ice cream truck, getting all the kids some ice cream. He's the one holding a barbecue, showing you the fun.
Everybody's a good guy in somebody's different. Somebody's eyes.
It's bad. Mm-hmm. I don't define someone's character by who they are. You can be a hood guy and still be very good. Still have a good heart. Take care of what you need to take care of and do what you do.
But I think there's two problems that. In the Somali community, one thing is we stayed in these impoverished neighborhoods for too long. The whole reason of moving to ghettos is to come there, get stabilized, and then try to move out. A lot of the times when I came to the neighborhood that I came into, probably only three Somali families. Most of the other ethnic groups that I grew up with bought houses in Pickering and like moved to more stabilized environments. So we stay in impoverished neighborhoods way too long, enough to have a super connection with the community. Obviously, if I lived somewhere for 20 years, I would have never left Regent Park if it wasn't broken down, because I have such a sense of connection to the neighborhood, and I was okay. My father was working night shifts. He was a cab driver, single father. I never wanted to leave my neighborhood until they literally said this court's being broken down. Then I was going to move. How many people died before me? The thing is, you don't see the negativity from a community when you live there. When you live there, all you see is, this is my home. So one thing is we stayed in these communities for too long. And I think another thing is in a family household, a lot of the kids I grew up with are single mothers. Almost all of my friends that I grew up with never either had a father that was with their mother, or like, even if he was with their mother, he wasn't an active father. So I don't want to paint Somali fathers to be like oh my god, the worst fathers in the world. Like, I think we all have good parents. It's just a lot of the Somali fathers were very absent in what was happening in their children's lives. And I'm not speaking for everybody, because I can't speak for everybody. I had a father that was very, very hands-on. Mm. But I seen the kids in my neighborhood and the things, especially the boys, got to do. My father would come to my brother's every single soccer game. Even, you know, in a late age, my dad... I remember when we buried my brother, he said, I don't know what I did wrong with this kid, you know? He's like, I did everything in my life so that he didn't choose this life. And sometimes it goes back to the qadr of Allah, that you guide, right? You do your best and you nurture a child, but Allah has the ultimate guidance, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that my brother was with these characters, he wasn't like immoral, he's an amazing person. But the life that he chose was not a life that my father chose for him.
You're right. And I think in life there's no right or wrong, there's only choices. Because Smooth, you grew up in a very rough neighborhood, and you have brothers, like friends that you've grown up since the sandbox, like you said, that you guys went through a lot together, but different outcomes.
Of course, we took different paths.
But don't you think, you guys, do you think, you know how people say it's easy to say you had a choice? I have a lot of guy friends that are in situations right now and said, I didn't choose his life, it chose me. Like a lot of people say that. Like,
I don't agree with that.
And my brother used to say that all the time. He used to be like, certain things happen. I'll tell you this. My brother used to say, my dad would go, he goes, no, certain things happen. And when your homie, like the homies that these people talk about, it's like they think like these guys are their brothers or my blood, you know? If certain things happen to him, like let's say he gets shot in another neighborhood or gets like stabbed, it's like you have to defend your brother. And so sometimes before, when like my brother's like past three, so in the early 90s, you're just fist fighting and stabbing other niggas. It didn't get to a point of killing each other, you know? But it's like it came from a place of just defending my homie. And defending your homie gets you into a whole other storm of defending more politics and more politics and more politics. Something that started so innocent will get you killed in 5 years. You get it? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
It could build to that.
Yeah,
that's fact.
And it's like people didn't choose to want to go to jail for 20 years. Like, they were just trying to defend something that they felt like they had a right to defend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what do you agree with her?
Yeah, I do.
And why do you think so?
I agree when they say this chose me sometimes because in life, as you, what did you say? What was your saying? You said
he said
life,
everybody makes a choice. You make that choice.
There's no right or wrong. There's no right.
Only choices.
Yeah. So as you say that, what I see is that is. There's some of my homies that were very good guys their whole life. Mm. Got into one situation where it was bad. It's considered bad. And let's say they got a charge. Now they have a charge that's on them and now they're an inmate. Mm. Now they can't get a regular job.
Yeah.
They can't live a regular life. Mm. They can't do what they want to do. They can't pursue the dreams that their parents had for them.
Yeah.
So they didn't choose that. It was... Something happened in that situation.
It was a mistake. That
but you can't erase that mistake. That's not how this law system works.
Yeah.
This law system wants you in there and wants you in their system as a felon, as a criminal.
Yeah.
They want to criminalize you. Mm. They want a reason to keep tabs on you and to see what you're doing. Yeah. But that's because of a mistake. So you were with some people that did something and you didn't know and you happened to get caught with them, but due to the code and due to the brotherhood, you held, you stood strong.
Yeah.
You stood 10 toes.
Yeah.
You stood on that. Now you have a charge. Now you're a felon. Now you can't do what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
So that in the sense of when they say, it chose me, I didn't choose it, in situations, that's true. There's many situations where that's true and they happen to have to live that life.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're saying I disagree, what do you mean by that?
Well, the reason why I say I disagree is because, like I said, it's a choice. So I personally have experienced jail. I went to jail for 2 years, and I said that in the last episode. And I was in the streets doing crazy stuff, whatever. There was times I was... How do I explain this?
All right. Caught up.
I've been shot at. I had a gun put on my face. I've been robbed. I've been beat up. But I never picked up a gun because I know that if I pick up a gun, that there's only two outcomes. Either I'm going to use it or I'm going to be shot. Because as soon as you pull out a gun on somebody, for the rest of your life, you have to think about, is that person coming after me? And that's not a mindset that I was comfortable going into. So I analyzed that option. I got into altercations. I got into different situations, but I chose a different outcome.
That's amazing.
Because I didn't want to live my life worrying about looking over my shoulder for the rest of my life. It's really just a mindset. Like in life, I realize it's not about what you do. People make mistakes. People go through things. I went to jail for 2 years when I came out. I have a criminal record. I went to university. I have a criminal record. I can't get certain jobs. I went to Somalia. I came back. You know what I did? I humbled myself. I started taking the bus. I had no money. I was broke. And I remember this one time I'm sitting at the bus stop and I'm like, damn, like I'm in my 30s. I don't have nothing. And I'm taking the bus. But you know what? At the end of the day, it's okay to humble yourself. You shouldn't feel bad for the situations you're in. It's all about pride. People have too much pride. There's always a way out. There's always a way out.
I love that you said that. I was talking to one of my guy friends. He's in the street life, like paranoia, like carries a gun on him. I remember when that kid said, I would never carry a gun. And then when I seen it on him, I was like, this is not you, man. Like, what are you doing? And he's like, Bella, it's either they shoot and I just get killed like a coward, or I shoot back, you know? And then I said, this is definitely not you. So I said, do you want me to get you a ticket? Let's get you out of the city if that's how you feel. Because there's so many times that I've told family members, like, okay, it's time for you to leave. And then you know what his answer was? What am I going to do, flip burgers in a different country? And it's like, it hurt me so badly because I know that his pride is going to keep him here. And Allah, I'm not saying that death is written for him. Death is written for all of us. I could be the one to get killed before him. But that life of paranoia is not going to give you, like, it's just going to eat you on the inside. It will eat at your mental, right? And it's like, he doesn't leave the house. He'll meet me certain places, double back. Like, even just that heaviness. And for you to think that I cannot leave the country because what am I going to do with myself outside of this country? high school cement. Like, he literally told me, he's like, he's a musician, and he's like, yo, my shit pops off. I make certain money the way I make certain money. Once, maybe if I have enough money to do a business, I could get out of the city. But right now, it's like, I have no choice but to be in the city. No, brother, you have every right to leave the city. If a place is not serving you purpose, and it's only eating at your mental, and you feel like you're just going on a down spiral ladder, you should want to leave. And I feel like it's the shaitan, exactly how you're saying, humble yourself and to feel like, you know, taking the bus is like, people think that's like the lowest thing that you could do, but to me, the scare, at least that's freedom.
You're right.
You sit at the bus stop, no one's looking for a nomad to pop at nomad. If it had written that happens, but you're not sitting there looking behind your back and stuff like that, that's freedom to somebody.
That's freedom. We're not being able, not having to worry and look behind your back. You know, I remember one day I was sitting at the bus stop and there was this older black man sitting beside me at the bus stop, and he asked me for change for the bus because he wanted to go up the street. And he said the funniest thing to me, and I still remember it to this day. And when he asked me for the money, he said, right now I'm broke, but I'm not poor, because poor is a mindset and broke is a state.
Real nigga.
And I started laughing.
How? Well, I lie.
It's true.
Humble yourself. And you humble yourself.
I gave him the change, of course.
He's a real nigga. No. Well, I. So a lot of people are prideful and they don't know a way out. And it, back to what you're saying, life is a choice, but some people don't have. Like, I feel like with you, you made these mistakes. Maybe it could be wrong place, wrong time, small little choices that you made. But the people around you were not, were not like a bunch of gangbangers. And like, these are not, you're not tied to any community for like 25 plus years where you have to go back. Either you answer to them or you answer to other people. Some people feel like they're deep in.
Oh, the ties.
Yeah, the ties is too much, you know? Even if you wanted to come out of you, like, I used to visit my brother and I used to be like, this is not you. And he'd be like, it's like the answer that he was giving me was like more cult-like answers. Like, it's like, and I get it. I used to say, wallahi, with me, I'm a very strong-minded person, and when I was younger, like, I would fight with my brother. Like, I have five sisters. My sister, but these two live, they're so crazy. Send them to Somalia. Like, I would fight with them and stuff like that. And I always said, my dad even said, if this one was a man, if this one was a man, and it's true, because I'm very like, right away, like, what are you talking to? Like, I had that, and I came from a place of privilege because I'm a female. Nobody putting a gun on me. And then they mean this girl, we're gonna fight. Whoever wins, we're using our hands, you know. But I'm very like, I act with instinct, and I don't really think when I was younger, so I feel like I would have kind of chose the gun lifestyle. It wouldn't choose me. And some people, it's just because you guys are men, you guys have to withdraw certain emotions, you know. Especially now, the young kids, they don't fight anymore, eh? Like,
no, there's no more fight.
There's no. And before, no, when I was growing up, it's like there's a big homie, there's a little homie. Now everybody wants to be the big homie.
Everybody's
the same level.
There's no hierarchy. This guy does.
Everybody's
this.
Flashing.
I get money. You get money. You have a gun. I have a gun. We're on the same level.
Yeah.
Like, your gun. They didn't stop making guns when they made yours. Mm-hmm. That's how these kids think. That's literally how they think. It's like, I have a gun. You have a gun. Facts. You make money. I make money. Okay, that's it. Unless somebody's putting money in their pocket and they're feeding them and they're doing this, that's the only way you're gonna have a big homie. But these kids are now all on the same level as their big homie, because their big homie's still in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. That same big homie is still in the neighborhood of them.
Also, the internet's evil. I feel like when we were younger, there was beef, but it wasn't televised. The way beef is televised right now, certain things gets under my skin. You get it? So it's like, when you bury your sibling and they've died due to gun violence, their video being a topic of discussion on social media, it could really affect somebody. You know what I'm trying to say?
Of course, it's going
to
affect your mental health.
Exactly.
Because right? Now we get past everything else. Now you're affecting somebody's mentals by bringing up trauma.
Yeah.
This is trauma that people are trying to bury,
overcome,
and forget. And over, now they're throwing it in your face like, yeah, like, we did this, we did that, your dead homie this, your dead homie that. Why are you talking about the dead?
So if you see your sibling's brain splattered on Instagram, on a regular blog website, you don't think that's enough to pick up a gun?
Yeah, that's enough to push someone over the edge.
Yes.
Even if they're a good person.
Yes.
Doesn't matter how good of a person you are.
Yes.
If you have things thrown in your face all day long, mm-hmm. someone's gonna break. Mm-hmm. There's gonna be, every human has a breaking point. So now if you're throwing things in somebody's face all day long, guess what? Even the good guy can turn bad.
Absolutely.
There's no such thing as somebody that's above it all. Like, we're human. At the end of the day, we're human, we have emotions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you take out the emotions out of a human, then I understand. Mm-hmm. But everybody has emotions. No matter how hard-bodied, how cool, how strong they think they are, how firm, Everybody has a breaking point.
You know, like, I remember in the last episode, you said, you made a good point about, like, you could be having the worst day and somebody could say something that could set you off, right?
Yeah.
And the littlest thing can take you to another level, right? And I think my solution is focusing on how to give young people the tools to deal with their emotions. I think women do a whole lot better job of dealing with their emotions because they accept the emotion, they analyze it, and then they move forward. But a lot of young guys, they think it's not cool to analyze your emotions, and it's, you got to hold it in and keep it in.
We come from a place of privilege. I feel like my brother could die and I could come back to my neighborhood. Everyone would be like, "Hola, Cristo, we're praying for you." If I had a younger brother, people like, "So you are you going to get it back in blood?" Like, guys have a lot of pressure on them to go and defend a situation. No one has ever came to me and said, "You're going to ride out for your dead homie." But I've been in positions where I told my cousins like certain things out of anger, like, "So you know what time it is, right?" Like, as a female, only, and I'm going to be really true, I could, when you're very like
angry
yeah. you know what I'm trying to say, and you know what time it is, it's, people know what time it is, and it's like, we're Muslims, and sometimes we have to take a step back and say, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem," this life is really a test, and our people are being tested on a level, like, there's actually no, like, I'm pretty sure people have been tested with this before us, because this life is repeated. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says it.
Yeah.
I've tested the people before you, and we're going to see who is true in faith, and who is going to stay steadfast, right? But men and women have a different onus on them, like a different type of, you know?
Of course.
How are you going to defend that?
For sure. Of course, because, like, it's that mentality.
We could be weak in our emotion. Yeah. We could cry. We could go on social media. We could go on Instagram Live and cry. But like, yeah. Everybody's like, "Oh my God, it's the girl that lost her brother."
Yeah.
But it's like, if you cry today, Nomad and my brother Smooth, on social media just because your brother died, you know, people will record you and use that for the rest of their life. Like,
and
you know,
ridicule.
And ridicule you. They do that to a guy right now for the rest of his life. And it's like,
that's just Jordan too.
Yeah.
She gave a meme forever.
Yeah,
but do you think Jordan cares about people posting pictures?
Not at all. He's laughing in the billions.
Why? Because he's getting to the bag.
Yeah, he's getting.
Because at the end of the day, you gotta look at it in terms of this life is temporary. I can say it over
and over.
It's but a day. It's gonna pass like right away. You're gonna blink one day. You're gonna be 50 years old. You're gonna forget like whoa, what just happened to me? Blah blah blah. I wanted to talk about a story in the Quran, the story of Yusuf alayhi salam. And if you get an opportunity, you should really look into reading his story. It's one of the most beautiful stories in the Quran. I love reading stories about the prophets and different people in history because of all the hardships that they overcome. And it just puts things in perspective to me about my life, that it's not a big deal. Everything that you go through is nothing.
I think people should always actually do that. Sorry to interrupt you. Like, they say that if you look in the Quran, your story is in there
somewhere. In there, yeah.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. So many times in my life, like, when I'm going through something, and like, I'll open Surah Maryam or something, and I'll read a paraphrase, and it's like,
it puts it into
perspective.
Do you know the most beautiful thing about the Quran is every time as you age and every time you read the Quran, it means something different to you.
Mm-hmm.
It grows with you while you read it. And I'm going to get back to the story of Yusuf. And at the beginning of the surah, Yusuf alayhi salam, he goes to his father and he says, "Oh my father, indeed I have seen a dream, 11 stars and the sun and the moon. And the sun and the moon, I saw them prostrating to me." And his father Yaqub replied to him, "Oh my son, do not relate your vision to your brothers, or they will contrive against you a plan. Indeed, Satan to man is a manifest enemy. Indeed, your Lord is knowing and wise. Certainly, were there in Joseph and his brothers signs for those who ask? When they say, 'Joseph and his brothers are more beloved to our father than we, while we are a clan.'" So basically, this shaitan planted thoughts in the brothers' minds of Yusuf alayhi salam to kill him or to cast him away. So when you look at life in general, you should look in terms of, the greatest trick Iblis ever did is making people think that he's not there, because he's everywhere. He's going to come at you from front, from the back, from the sides all day. And if you can remind yourself of this, it will help you deal with the instant gratification of reacting. Reacting is the problem. I think.
It's trying to put iman in your heart to soften your heart. I feel like a lot of the times, even when I started practicing, I was trying to find a way to not always get so angry so quick. Like, I have a short fuse, and I used to read a lot on like ashabs and stuff that had short fuses, and it's like, it's not a sign of iman to act out of anger real quick. Like, you should be able to, again, like, feel your emotions out and then not want to fight, not want to be so aggressive. Being part of being a Muslim is practicing patience and practicing kindness. I feel like I was kind when I wanted to be, but I'm one of those people, like, I would choose aggression before everything. Like, and it kind of follows you, you're that character. I was like that in middle school, in high school, I was like that. Not the bully, but, like the gale. You know what I'm saying? You know? And it's like, the older you get, like, you don't want to take that, like, character with you. It's like, at a certain age, you're like, you want to be more practical, you know, especially if you're saying you're practicing. When you say you're practicing, you can't have enemies everywhere. It's weird, you know. So a lot of the times when I read about hadiths and stories of the Prophet, it just all comes to being kind and patient and steadfast, and I try to implement that every day. So now, even sometimes when I feel like somebody's like saying something bad, or I'm taking it in a bad way, I try to practice kindness in a sense where I give my Muslim brother and sister 70 excuses, or they didn't mean it that way, or I think I might have reacted that way. And that's, I feel like, thing. Yeah, I feel so like that, because a lot of people get into beefs, and it wasn't even like that. It wasn't that type of politics, and people take it there because how they comprehend things. But if you didn't comprehend it with a negative light already, maybe things would have turned a different way, you know? So having good thought of your brother and your sister.
Wish for your brother, wish for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Having good thoughts, even like, I don't think they meant it like that. Ilahi tells you to literally give them excuses. 70 excuses, and none of us won't even give you 2 excuses. Mans get, like, shoot people for less than that, you get it? And Ilahi, literally, we're going to be questioned by our judgment and our actions. And so you want to really, really think out what you're acting upon, especially when it has to do with another life, right?
If you look at Somalis in the last 30 years in the diaspora that we have a lot of successful Somalis in Absolutely. All types of industries. If Somali people were violent, you wouldn't have reached that type of success that fast. So I think the problem is poverty, not violence. Somali people are not violent. And if you look at the Jamaican community in the 90s and the early 2000s, they had a high crime rate. If you look at the Vietnamese when they came to Canada in the 80s, if you look at the Italians, all
went the
same
cycle.
They all went through the same cycle of violence and crime rates in low-income housing. And I think
they always have the opportunity to leave low-income housing. A lot of Somali parents have this excuse of, like, we're not going to go into these mortgage housing. They have no anticipation of leaving. Like, I completely agree with that part, too. My father, my late father, always had that. I'm never going to go and buy a house in Brampton. It's not for me. I'm against rebel. You're in a war with Allah. We will take our calamities as they come. And I don't think they thought the hood was that bad, because growing up, it just kept getting badder and badder. And the fact that is we stay there too long. That's what I think the issue is. I personally think if you got 5 sons or 5 daughters in impoverished neighborhood or whatever, low housing neighborhood, y'all should be moving out the hood. Take your mom out the hood, okay? Go get a condo. Y'all don't need to buy the condo. It could be a $1,500 rent, and y'all pay it. At the end of the day, why do we have to wait for our parents to change our dynamics or change our environment? We have the resources. We go to school. We can work. We should take our parents out the hood.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I agree with that. But now,
absolutely positively.
But now,
respectfully.
So let me give you a different perspective of what I think the issue is. I don't think
I really want to hear that.
Poverty.
You don't think it's staying too long poverty. In the hood?
I don't think it's staying too long. Let me tell you what I think the issue is with all this violence and things like
that. I never said nobody was shot in Richmond Hill.
It's happened.
I went 2 times.
No, no, we don't know them, but it's happened. Okay. But what I'm saying is, I think the main issue is that these youth don't have good OGs. And what I mean by OGs is
facts.
It's not the homie. It's not the big homie in the hood that I'm talking about.
Drop a clue, Bob.
I'm literally talking about the homie. I'm talking about the homies that literally live in the same neighborhood as these kids, went through the same struggles as these kids, made something of themselves, and they don't come back and give back to the community. They don't show these kids life. They don't do things for these kids to show them that there's another way out of this. Because what we're forgetting and what we're always ignoring is that these are youth, these are children. These are minds that are still being built. And the people that got out of it,
it's easy
to influence them, but guess what? Their OG is that 30-year-old that's still in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
Their OG is not
that's their example.
That's the example of who they're seeing, but that's who they think is their older head. That's the guy that who they see is the goal.
And they're not seeing the other.
They don't see the homie that grew up in the same neighborhood.
Yeah.
Ended up being a lawyer, ended up being a doctor, ended up being a teacher, ended up getting a good paying job, ended up as a top plumber, ended up as a top engineer.
Yeah.
He doesn't even need to do the greatest job.
Yeah.
As long as that guy has hustle and that guy has drive, you can teach these kids this.
Mm-hmm.
You can do things that give back to these communities.
Different options.
Do you think community talks, like, you know, when you were younger, there used to be like youth leaders that would come and be like, oh, I did 20 years in jail and this is how my life turned out. Do you think that we need to kind of set something up where Somali...
Of course.
You know, they had that...
So not every hood nigga's going to be in the masjid. I feel like they keep throwing these youths...
A lot of young kids came there.
Yeah, for the like, during funerals and stuff, and they try to catch them off guard.
No, they had actual program before COVID.
Every Sunday, a lot of the young kids used to come and see. But it's not even that. It's not... It doesn't mean that, like, one person or one individual needs to take charge and try to bring a bunch of people from different neighborhoods together to handle this issue. It's everybody's grown up in a different neighborhood.
Facts.
Yeah. I grew up in a different neighborhood.
That was never a problem growing up.
I grew up in a different neighborhood. You grew up in a different neighborhood.
Facts.
Nomad grew up in a different neighborhood. But guess what? We're all people that have been in these neighborhoods and have come out of it.
Absolutely.
Now, if I speak to a kid from my neighborhood today,
mm-hmm.
and I sit down with these kids that are looked at as bad and savages, if I sit down with them, I will have a regular conversation with them, and we'll talk about life, and we can talk about what they want to do in life, because they look at me as someone that came from the same place as them.
I think so what I you're saying is absolutely right. We should get them while they're younger and their brains are still easy to be influenced. But when you say, sometimes speaking to, because I have family members that are already like knee deep into this, and when you speak about them, it's like they feel like there's a place of no return and there's no advice given to them. It's like, I'm here, I'm already going through with it, and I'm like, there's no looking back from here.
Yeah.
So I think some people, Allah will have their path for them, and may Allah protect them and stuff like that. But I think our main focus should be these middle school, high school kids, the ones that their brains are still fresh and not like anything like from the internet, from what they're told, it's easily absorbed.
So,
those are the ones you need to get.
Yeah, but I'm saying to you, pain and anguish and loss can be shared.
Of course.
I can relate to a kid mm-hmm. that's lost someone close
mm-hmm.
to him. I can tell him that the way to handle this is not go pick up a gun, go do some drugs. I can tell him that because I've been through it. I lived it. I can break through with that kid.
Mm-hmm.
But we need more support in the sense of there needs to be more older people that help out these kids. You can't be scared of these kids.
What answer do you give them if you're talking to a group of kids that feel like they're being targeted by other individuals? Okay, you know what? They're going to put their guns down. They don't want to fight anymore. They want to just dead everything, right? How about if they feel unsafe too, or they feel like this is going to put them in a place where like they can never no longer defend themselves because they've chosen a different life? And don't you think that you can't guarantee them safety?
No, it's not about guaranteeing safety though. It's about building a mindset. You have to
mm-hmm.
break down
mm-hmm.
this wall that they have. And this and wall is built over years.
So you think you can do it to every single kid in different habits or just kids from your own neighborhood?
It's not, but look at this. You see how you're thinking? But how you're thinking?
Mm-hmm.
How you're thinking?
Because I've had this conversation and nobody budged.
It's not even that.
I never understand.
It's you're thinking in a broad
same struggle.
Scope.
I guess it's the same struggle. Seeing is believing, right? Seeing somebody the same as you, they went through the same thing. It makes more sense.
Also, like for you, how you're thinking is a broad struggle.
Yeah.
How I always see it. How I always see it is
individual.
I will talk to maybe a group of 15 to 20 kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'll sit down with them. They'll tell me their issues. They'll talk whatever because they know I've been through whatever they've been through. But in my head, I want to help every single one of them. But I know in my heart that I can't help every single one.
Absolutely. Yep.
But guess what?
That's a scary
guess what, though?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give my full effort, and I'm going to give everything I have to these kids to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say 20 kids I talk to,
mm-hmm.
I break through to 3 of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough.
That's enough, yeah.
I can't think. How you're thinking is, you want me to break through to a group of 30 kids and have them leave a gang life and have them leave a street life. That's not how life's going to work.
Yeah,
right?
I'm shooting for the moon.
It starts by, like, little victories. You take the little victories.
Facts.
In a war, what do they say? You may have won the battle, but you never won the war.
Mm-hmm.
So every little battle, every little thing that you do matters. Chipping away, it matters. Because now let's say I get 3 out of these 20 kids to do good, change their life, come to me, help them out,
yep.
and I get them doing. Now,
less is more.
You have to remember, these 3 kids are still friends with these 17 guys. They're not going to cut them off because mm-hmm. they decided to fix up their life. They're going to look at those guys and maybe be inspired. Oh my God, so-and-so.
Pay it forward.
So-and-so left this lifestyle, and now he's a top plumber. He's making a bag. Okay, now he comes to him. Yo, broski, like, come to my crib. He shows him, mm-hmm. 10 bands, legit money he made.
It's true.
Now he looks at that and says,
whoa, there's another
that's
outlet?
What you're doing?
There's another
outlet? That's how you're making money?
Yeah.
I just sold, like, 10 dimes and made $1,000, but you made $5,000 in a week?
Yeah.
What are you doing, broski?
Yeah.
Now,
legit.
Now that's spreading. Now it's spreading. The good is spreading.
Mm-hmm.
So we need more positive role models in these neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Facts.
And we gotta stop being scared of these kids, because at the end of the day, the main word is they're kids.
Yeah, they're kids.
That fear of them shouldn't overtake your deeds in life. Like, I want to do good in this life.
Yeah.
I want to give back. My biggest thing in life that I always say is, when I leave this earth, I want my impact to be that
he tried.
I made a difference. I tried to help people.
Correct.
I don't want to leave this earth on a, he was a good dude.
Yeah.
You know, I knew Smooth. He was a funny guy. That's not the things I want people to say about me.
Yeah.
What I want people to say about me is, oh, Smooth helped me get this job. Oh, Smooth helped me see this in life. Oh, Smooth told me there's another way besides this. I want to have an impact that helps someone get further in life, because that's what makes me happy. What makes me happy is other people's happiness.
Mm-hmm.
If I can help you get out of the same struggle that I got out of, I want to take as much people
Facts.
Out of the mud as I can.
Facts.
I don't want to be at the mountaintop by myself.
Yeah.
I want to have
especially
every, I want
have
all
so
my
much ties.
I want
to
have
so much
homies.
Ties to people that are in the mud or like are in a hard behind a hard rock. A lot of the homies that passed away and the type of conversations I've had with them before they passed away, it's like you feel like at least they knew you knew that. Before everything happened to them, you reached out, you were just like a phone call away and stuff like that. And a lot of the conversations haunt you because no one knows the person from the other side, you know?
Of course.
Everybody just sees the bad guy, da 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 da.
Yeah.
No one sees the other side of this human guy that goes back to a Hoya every single day and an Abo and has the same structure, unzi smelling from the house. Like, it's the same Muslim Somali dynamics. And so it's just
sad. That's just, you know, like, I don't know if you're okay with this, but I want to tell you a story about how I met your brother.
Of course, yeah.
So, like, I just recently told her that, the first person I met in her family was her brother. And when I was 16 years old, we met through a mutual friend. And we ended up going to, what was it, like a talent show? Because that's what the youth
used to be. Yeah, that used to be cool. Talent shows.
Yeah, so at the talent show, a fight broke out, and somebody ended up pulling out a gun. And her brother saved me, you know? And because of that moment, I always remember him. So sometimes random thoughts will come to my head and I'll remember him and I'll make dua for him, you know?
May Allah accept it.
So, like, it's just a reminder that even you have these young brothers that passed away, Allah na haisto, it doesn't mean that they were bad people. You see bad people doing good things.
All across
the world, right? And you'll see good people doing bad things, because we all make mistakes at the end of the day. And on the day of judgment, Allah saves 99 parts of His mercy for the day of judgment. And if you see the mothers have a nahris that mankind itself doesn't have, and that blows my mind when I think about on the day of judgment, the most merciful is going
more merciful than your mother, even the one
the
that
mothers. And that blows my mind, because you're gonna see, we don't know who's gonna go to heaven, who's gonna go to hell. All we know is that this world is just a test, right? So,
and of course,
like you said, your pops did everything, and that was his test. You know what I'm saying? So, like, you got
everything. Like, I never want to like paint my brother up to be a villain. He was the best brother a sister could have. He was an amazing character.
Very great
person.
Very funny.
It's just that our parents want a certain lifestyle for us and a certain image, and for you to be like, even me right now, like I went to university, but I was always saying master's, PhD, master's. Like, you're never, wallahi, you're never, never good enough, you know?
That's what
like,
I love about Somali parents.
Yeah, you're, it's always like,
more,
you know?
More.
And so I think that we're all sometimes could be a villain in somebody's story. We all wake up thinking we're good people, but we're all a villain in somebody's story.
Exactly.
And so I just, we feel like we're dehumanizing these brothers.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like that's the main,
humans.
That's the main thing I feel like that gets lost in this.
Yeah, these young Somalis.
Of these youth and the violence.
And the perception of Toronto Somalis.
Yeah, it's this perception that they're violent individuals.
They're
that
not.
That they're mean, that they're all about the gang life. They're not. They're humans. They have regular conversations. They laugh. They go home to their mom's house.
I tell a lot of people, do you think everybody that chooses to do certain things, it's like, if they could avoid choosing that lifestyle, I feel like they would have avoided it too.
No, they would.
Well, I feel like, you know, when we say, oh, let's talk to one side, it's like, no, talk to both sides. Both sides would want somebody to talk to them, I feel like. I feel like nobody wants to go, like, live the rest of their life in this type of arena. Nobody, not the bad guy, not the hood guy, you know?
You're absolutely right, because, like,
everybody wants a dead guy.
Yeah, no, like a little while ago, like a couple of years ago, our community center, like, that's where most of the kids used to reconvene and come and do different things, or they'd be in the neighborhood. And at the time when I was doing a lot and I was really trying to help these youth out, one idea I had and I came up with and did with some of the homies that I know is that I had some of these homies that they look up to and that they think is that guy, that dude in the neighborhood. I had them talk to these kids on a regular conversation. And the children and the youth were shocked at what was coming out of these guys' mouths. These guys were telling them, listen,
don't do it.
You guys are children, you guys don't have a charge. You guys all live at your mother's house, you guys are in school, you guys have a clean slate. They're looking at them telling them, I can't go to the States.
Facts.
I can't see certain family members.
Facts.
I can't chill with some of my friends because he's a felon and I'm a felon. Like, facts. You guys have a chance in life that we don't have. We can't take back life. We can't take back life. Whatever we did, we did. And every mistake we did, we stand on it. Because we're grown men now and we have to stand on what we do. But you guys don't have to stand on anything. You guys have lost homies. You guys have no connection to this neighborhood. You guys have siblings and older cousins, yes. But nobody ever is going to force you guys to do what you have to
do.
And I had guys that they look up to that are looked at as scary in the neighborhood telling these to these kids.
Facts.
And the reaction that these kids had was shock. And their minds were blown. They're like, what? So-and-so's talking like this? He's doing this, that, and the third. The one thing that I want to like finish this off with is in the last couple of years or so, the people leading the charge of trying to help the Somali community and speak on these things has been Somali women.
Yeah.
And guess what?
Nobody listens to us.
Guess what? I put my hand up and I show love to them. I respect them for that.
Big
shout out to them for all of the work that they're doing.
Yeah.
Little, small, big, whatever it is, keep doing what you're doing because they're resilient.
Yeah.
And guess what?
Yeah.
The Somali men in the community, we need to step up.
Absolutely.
We need to help these sisters.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, as much good and as much help as they want to give these kids, like, no disrespect to any woman, is
so much we can do.
There's only so much we can do. It's just like the single mother household.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom can do everything for you, but she'll never understand being a male.
Never, yeah.
So, as males and as young men in the city, we need to do more, and we need to be more frontline with our sisters. We need to be hand in hand with our sisters when they're leading these conversations. It can't be just them.
But you know,
they need support. The support has to come from us. That has to come from people that have come from these marginalized neighborhoods and are doing a little bit of good. You don't have to be the greatest person.
No.
You can have a regular job. Anything you say matters. Don't be scared of these kids. Come to arms, brothers, and step in. Like, we need to step up and help out these sisters.
I definitely agree with you. When I was younger, and when you were younger, there was an older brother that steered you towards the right way.
Always.
But you don't see that today. And I'll be brutally honest that I personally now understand the importance of it. Before, I was too caught up in my own life. And even now, when I look at young kids, I get scared when I see them because there's a stigma that around young Somali kids in Toronto, which is wrong. And I think the media has portrayed Somalis in a very negative light. And Somalis themselves are not violent people. They are very happy, kind people. And another thing that we need to focus on is the identity. Somali women understand the culture. They listen to the music. Some of the Somali men have steered away from the culture. And looking at it, there's a stigma
mostly
here in Canada.
Toronto, though, only. Yeah,
there's a stigma for Somali guys where they think it's not cool or not nice to know the culture. That's another reason why I brought my girlfriend. So we will talk about that sooner or later, where we're going to talk about the importance of camels to the Somali man. So you guys get a better understanding of what it is to be a Somali man, you know?
Always wants to throw us off. Okay, let's go to the camel conversation, because I'm actually very excited to hear this.
What?
Your camel, Kylie.
She's rolling her eyes. I think she's still jealous of my camel.
She still hasn't Googled the value of the camel because she knows it's worth a lot. She wanted to get at my statement at the beginning where I said I can, you know, get a wife with a female camel. Yeah. That's worth a lot. So for those girls that want 50K meher, 20K meher, guess what?
There's no camels in Toronto, so.
No. I'm going back. She's going back home to get her payment.
That conversation does not apply to you, brother.
No, it does. I can pay for that camel at home.
Yeah.
Well, when we go back home, we both go ride that camel. What? We're going to have to sell home back in Somalia. Don't play with me.
He is telling you a lie like every time he does in the GTA. Okay.
Oh,
like,
wow. And we're back at that again. Let's move into something more lighter.
Drum rolls.
We're going to do the Somali Spotlight. And today I picked a friend of mine from Minnesota who I deeply admire. And I think this will interest you. Smooth, because you do deal with young children and you understand the importance of creativity.
Of course.
So the spotlight today is going to be on a brother from Minnesota named Mohammed Haji. He is an author of a comic book called Lalo and a founder of Bahdon Comics, which is very interesting, because he, to me, it blew my mind that there's a young brother who created a comic book. And the Lalo comic book is based on a Somali superhero woman.
I've actually seen it.
You've seen it before?
Yeah.
So,
there's a buzz in Minnesota about it.
Yeah,
a
buzz. You know, big deal. Knows what's going on.
She knows what's everything going on. In Burjlo City. MSP Airport, in and out. It's my second home.
Okay.
So, Mohammed Haji was born in Somalia, and he was displaced by war, like most of us Somalis in the diaspora. Mm-hmm. He found himself in South Africa as a young boy, mm-hmm. living in a city called Port Elizabeth, and not away from his mother, who lived in East Africa, and his father, who lived in the U.S. And he had a love for creativity and arts, which was founded by his mother taking him to see a movie as a young boy. And from watching that movie, he was fascinated by acting. And as he became a teenager, he had an opportunity to... this is a funny story. He actually, he was hanging out with his friends who were South African, and they were telling him, hey, there's an audition. And they were about to hop in a van, and he hopped in the van without knowing where he was headed.
I respect it.
I love
it. Always risk it for the biscuit.
Which is beautiful. And he ended up getting picked to actually fly to Cape Town, I think it was, to do the final audition with the director. And at the time, he didn't understand the magnitude of that. And when he ended up getting the position for, this is a movie called Assad in South Africa, if you guys ever have opportunity to watch it. And 2 weeks before that, before the filming started, his visa to the U.S. came.
Oh.
He was at a crossroad.
And he was like, got to go.
So he had to choose between choosing the acting in South Africa or moving to the U.S. U.S. And his father obviously is going to say, yeah, you got to come right now, right?
Now or never.
Oh, my, within 30 days, he ended up getting a job. Within 6 months, he was living alone. Okay?
This man's a legend.
Legend.
Freaking legend.
And then by 2018, during Ramadan, he came up with the idea to start this comic book.
Very happy he chose a female.
So,
that kind of guy.
This speaks to, it's not about your circumstances. It's how bad do you want it at the end of the day. This is a brother who moved to the U.S. in 6 years ago. Less than 6 years ago. And he actually created a comic book, which is unbelievable, within 6 years. And I have a surprise for you. I was able to get him to ship 10 copies of this. I remember you telling me about your little sister. Yeah. She does this stuff.
He's
going to ship 10 copies of this for you, and you give it to wherever you see fit.
Hey, I like comic books, but too.
She has nieces. So yeah.
You have nieces. Yeah. Just, and animation.
You don't think I'm into animation?
No, we don't.
I'm a heavy. I could color. I want to. I don't know about drawing.
Yeah, but you can color.
I follow comic books.
She just said she can color. Okay. I can color too, Bella. I can color too.
I like how he brought this artistic conversation. He turned right to smooth. Like, I'm not artistic.
Hey, we're not saying you're not artistic, but yet you're not artistic. I'll say it. No man doesn't want to say it. I'll say it.
But shout out to that guy, man. That's an amazing. There's another sister too. I think her name's Faduma. She's also writing a book on
a children's book.
Yeah, you know the girl I'm talking about. Yeah. And her, like, I think her family owns the Somalian Museum, where her parents run it or something like that. Yeah, and she's doing a book, and the main character is a little girl with a hijab on.
I'm very happy with where the Somali community is today, and the growth that they've made, especially with the younger generation. I always talk about how the younger generation is smarter, they're better. They are trying to pursue their creative side.
Of course.
That I never got the opportunity to, and I think they are special. Because now you're seeing Somalis in so many different creative avenues, and that's what we're good at. As Somalis, I think Somalis are the best in arts, creativity, music, whatever it is. And
glad as hell, you know we're not artistic.
No, we are. We're clearly. See what's happening.
We are animation.
What we're doing.
Yeah.
We think Somali's out of the box.
I love Somali acting. You guys, once you guys have a chance, please go and tap into the Somali community on YouTube. They are unmatched.
My sisters, you know, I was watching a show with my sister and my mom the other day of this guy named Lee Ban. Abdi Lee Ban.
Yeah.
And this other girl.
He's on Universal TV.
And this other girl, I don't remember who she
was. They're hilarious.
It was actually very, very funny.
They are obsessed with. I think somebody taught them in 2020 what a prank is. Yeah. Every day, prank. Every day is a new prank. My husband died. I died. Prank. Can't sleep. Can't walk. Prank. Literally, I cry because they're being so da'a. Like, they're just so genuine. There's no like.
Somalis are the funniest people in the world. We're the funniest people in the world.
Are outside of this world. So I said that next time I come back on YouTube, I'm trying to work on my Somali. I just want to let you guys know. I told my sister the only way I'm going to come back on YouTube is if I could cater to the Somali community in Somalia. Yeah. Like, I want to be able to speak to them. You know, they used to say to my comments, Naya, why you don't know your own language? It's true. These people are not. It's not. I should not only be catering to people that speak English. And sometimes subtitles is not enough for people.
So you're gonna learn the culture?
I speak the language, but I want to be able to like be like, okay, today month of makeup can go half semana, wahadla Somali. You know.
Maybelline.
Don't quote me. But you know what?
Maybe it's Maybelline.
You know, so I love them, man. Are people? Sometimes we negative light is shunned on us a lot.
It's
but
terrible.
We are people that persevere,
and that's why we have the Somali spotlight amongst other things, because we want to
remind
show
you
the
guys.
World and remind you that we're doing just as much good in this world, and we want to make sure we shine that light on everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Small, big, middle, whatever it is, we're going to shine the light on you. And if we haven't spoken on you, don't worry, we're going to get to you. There's a lot of Somalis doing a lot of things.
Great things.
And we're all going to give you the chance to shine. Don't worry, we got you.
Absolutely.
We got you. We're for the people.
Oh, yeah.
This podcast is always for the people and will always be about the people.
And the people, by the people, he means a female gender first and then the mandem after.
I mean, if that's the way to get me a wife, I'm on the train. Holla back, ladies.
So Why you gotta be so smooth? It's not Dr. Love, okay? Be yourself.
I know how to play the game the right way.
Yourself.
Listen, man, I'm never gonna mess that up. Yeah. You know what I am, team ladies, always. You know how that goes.
Anyway, guys, it's time to do the glad tidings, so.
Glad tidings to the believer of Black History Month. I know we were going to do, we're gonna focus on Black Muslims. This person that we chose is actually from Morocco. So if French Montana is allowed to say nigga, then I think this is okay too, right?
He considers himself Black, technically.
So yeah, he's African, right? So mm-hmm. Morocco, cool.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. Cool.
I hope you guys are cool with this. So we picked a lady named Fatima Al-Fihri. Do you know who she is? No. Did you guys know? You know I love saying, did you guys know?
The daughter of the merchant?
No, you're wrong. You are wrong, but...
I was reading your thoughts. The merchant, so I
saw...
Glad tidings to the believers.
She's a fortune teller.
Fatima Al-Fihri.
She is the founder of the first university in history.
MashaAllah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And she's a woman. Emphasis on
Muslim
a woman.
Yeah, yeah.
A Muslim woman.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know.
But you didn't even know
any
that.
Chance Bella has to big up the
that's
woman.
Why, listen, that's why you guys... this kind of moment is... I learned from you. Half the time, I'm glad tidings. I'm just quiet. Ain't no back talk.
So, like, you guys do agree with this, right?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So, she started the first university ever, and her nickname was Mother of Boys, a.k.a. Bella Big Deal.
Mother of Boys.
Which probably stems from her endless charity and the fact that she took students under her wing. She was a daughter of a very rich merchant, and she decided to, and when her father died and her husband ended up dying, she took the money and she invested it in building a mosque, which became a learning center. And this learning center is still standing to this day. It's called Al-Qarawiyyin. Don't mind me for butchering it. And it was written in the Guinness Book of World Records that this is the first known account of a university.
Wow. Insane.
MashaAllah.
Yeah.
She did something that, like, you know,
big things.
A lot of people.
Was she charging people? Could, was university free then?
It's free, of course. Obviously, man.
No, back then. Back then, she was doing charity and all that. So
the concept was the concept didn't even exist for university back then. This is how do I say it? The year 800. Yeah. 800. She was born 1980.
You didn't tell me that. Yeah. I'm just thinking, you know.
It's a long, long time ago.
A very long time ago.
Yeah.
The concept of university in where she's from, Morocco, or concept of university across the board.
The world. It didn't exist.
It was in the Guinness.
She's the one who created
it. Was
the
Guinness Book of World Records. So
first university in history of mankind.
I feel very
proud.
Proud and
blows your mind, right?
Why was this not in any
knowledge is power. You know, there's a saying.
Books growing up.
There's a saying.
That's how it goes.
There's a saying by. There's a saying by.
We call it her story.
Her story.
Because his is like y'all be doing too much.
No. Her story. That's not how life works. But she is a woman in history.
No, that's dope, though. That's
and she made a big impact.
Super dope.
Yeah, and there's a saying by a man named Stoyakovich. No, Stoyatis.
Stoyakovich is the ball player, but
you're right.
I was
going
to say, you're leading me somewhere.
Anyways, I'm just going to go right into the saying. And he goes, there's hundreds of young men that would die for the truth. Very few of them that would spend 5 years studying to know what that truth is. Knowledge is power. Study.
That's facts.
Yeah, so let's get into what the next episode is. I think so. The next episode is the responsibilities that you need to have before you get married. What do you need to fix and prepare for before you get married?
You know, that's my genre. Shit. I speak that language.
Oh,
okay, that's dope.
You're fluent in that one.
I'm fluent because I be telling these, and you know these my co-hosts. You think when I be dropping these knowledge, they be like writing notes down. They're just looking at me like, no. And it's like,
so Bella, I'm gonna tell you this one more time.
I talk to a lot of women. I be around a lot of women.
I'm trying to be like you. I'm trying to talk to a lot of women.
Exactly. Yeah, hilarious. I have the keys to some answers, but y'all, like, if today I came to you guys to, like, get advice and be like, this is what you do, I'd be like, okay, you know what? I'll try to implement that. But y'all just have a gem right
here. No, you just don't know that we're writing it down.
Anyway, you guys, we're going to see it in the next episode. I'm going to teach these boys what accountability means. You guys, and we're out. This is an unfinished conversation, and it's not for everybody to be listening to. And we out.
We out. See y'all next week.
I'm at
the